we have to understand that it may be in God's permissive will that some suffering occur for reasons that are not immediately evident. And so to hasten a death or to try to avoid all suffering may not actually be the best thing.
This is Family Policy Matters, a weekly radio show and podcast from NC Family, designed to better inform listeners about the critical issues of the day and encourage you to be voices of persuasion for family values in your communities. And now your host, NC Family President John Rustin.
Thank you for joining us for Family Policy Matters. As the baby boomer generation ages, more and more American families are facing the sometimes overwhelming prospect of making difficult decisions regarding end-of-life medical care for their parents or grandparents. Our guest today is Dr. Frank Moncher, a licensed clinical psychologist and consultant for the Diocese of Arlington, Virginia, and Catholic Charities. He has taught both undergraduate and graduate studies in psychology, particularly focusing on the integration of psychology with the Catholic Christian view of the human person. Dr. Moncher has published journal articles, book chapters, and blog posts on a number of topics related to children, family, and religion, including writing for the Culture of Life Foundation about how families can support suffering elders. Dr. Moncher, welcome to Family Policy Matters. It's great to have you on the show.
Thank you for having me, John.
Now, Dr. Moncher, as I mentioned in my introduction, a growing number of adults in America today are being confronted with how to best care for elderly parents and or grandparents who are nearing the final stages of life. No doubt these are difficult times and difficult situations that raise a series of difficult questions and challenges. What kind of trends or changes have you seen in American culture in recent years regarding how our nation is caring for the elderly?
Well, I think what's been going on nationally for probably decades now is an increased sense of independence of children from their families as technology has allowed us to move about more freely. It's rarer and rarer that children are living close to their aging parents. And so we've got a loss of what was a time-honored tradition of families being close together and parents maybe aging within one community close to their then middle-aged children who would be available to care for them. And now we've got a situation where, you know, aging parents may be living quite a distance from any of their children. And so I think that does present new challenges.
Interesting. Well, I think that makes a tremendous amount of sense. As mobile as our society is, clearly those tight bonds and physical locality that used to exist more and more just are not there as much today. Now, Dr. Moncher, I know you've written about the way in which verbal engineering leads to social engineering, and which certainly brings about changes within our culture. Talk about this a little bit, if you would, sort of explain that idea, and then describe how these factors have impacted our society's perspective toward the elderly and infirm, and the role of families in providing care for them.
Yes, our society has become impacted in challenging ways, I think, by alternative views of the human person. And the Christian view of the human person, of course, is pretty clear and straightforward. You know, man was created as male and female. Life is a gift which comes with certain responsibilities. The family is the primary social unit and has great meaning. These ideas are radically different than some of what we see in society. And the classic example would be when it comes to the issue of abortion, where, you know, language has changed how people began to see the killing of an innocent life. And the label, of course, was being pro-choice, and choice, you know, who could argue with that? And we're seeing a similar thing happening in this idea of caring for elders at the end of life. You know, what was called euthanasia or mercy killing, you know, then has morphed into physician-assisted suicide, and now suicide is apparently a bit too harsh. And so there's this kind of changing of the languaging now to calling the same idea of hastening the death of an elderly person as medical aid and compassion. And I think it's this that we need to be fearful of, because it really puts the wrong idea into people's minds about what's happening in the hospital situation.
Well, that's so true. And I think, as you've pointed out, we see that it's kind of he who controls the language controls the debate in lots of circumstances and in lots of arenas in our culture. And this is clearly one of those. In addition to the language, how have you seen the good intentions of say, family members and physicians who want to alleviate the suffering that elderly individuals may be experiencing, how have those good intentions sometimes led down the dark path of hastening death?
Well, I'm glad you highlight the idea of a good intention, because we don't want to speak about things that happen at the end of life when loved ones are suffering as if most people are callous. You know, there are good intentions there. And yet people can become confused in sorting through what to do when death is imminent, you know, and when it's time to let go of a loved one who's the end of their natural life is coming, and extraordinary efforts of any sort really aren't going to prolong the life and thus can do damage or certainly not do good, versus allowing a person to live with some element of suffering because their life still does have meaning and death isn't imminent if they're well cared for.
Hmm. So Dr. Montcher, how can relatives, particularly adult children, be well prepared to assist their elderly or ill loved ones in making medical decisions when that time comes?
I like to think of this in terms of our understanding, again, of a Christian view of the human person. And of course, we're made with free will and with inherent dignity. And it's important to honor the dignity of the aging person or the infirm person by discussing with them earlier rather than later what their desires are. You know, it's very difficult to do that in the midst of a crisis or once things have begun to deteriorate. You know, the best recommendation that I've read is that, you know, in that discussion with the person who might be facing a demise at some point, is to have them designate what's sometimes called an agent or a surrogate through this process called a durable power of attorney. You know, someone who they trust, who understands the dignity of human life, who understands what our Christian faith teaches us about how to manage things at the end of life and how, you know, suffering is not always a bad thing. I know there's other mechanisms for doing this that are more quickly done, checking boxes and signing forms. But with technology and medical treatment changing the way it is, I think you really want to have someone you know cares about you being your spokesperson at the end of your life.
Hmm. Are there certain instruments that you would suggest that elderly individuals may consult with their children or loved ones about that could help them express what their desires are if they are in an end-of-life situation?
There's certainly things available that can guide you through how to do these types of directives. But there's some cautions out there because some of these instruments have gotten very popular, but they've been endorsed by what used to be called the Hemlock Society. Now it's called Compassion and Choices. They've tried to move towards some forms that really, at the end of the day, are going to hasten many people's death. And so there's probably no substitute for having someone you trust being able to engage in the dialogue with the doctors and physicians when the time comes.
Right. And I think having those, what can be difficult decisions, but really necessary discussions about the types of care that those individuals desire and the level of care and things of that nature.
You're listening to Family Policy Matters, a radio show and podcast from NC Family. You can sign up to receive an updated podcast each week on iTunes or any podcast app. To listen to the show online, and for more resources that will help you be a voice of persuasion in your community, go to our website at ncfamily.org.
Now, Dr. Montcher, what are some of the most common obstacles that you see to patients and families making good ethical and compassionate decisions related to medical care and treatment for the elderly?
I think the obstacles generally center around the idea of fear of suffering or a misunderstanding of suffering, and not realizing that the time of death is really in God's hands and that this has been something that God knows before. And to fear suffering to too great an extent or to misunderstand it can really get in the way. We have to understand that it may be in God's permissive will that some suffering occur for reasons that are not immediately evident. And so to hasten a death or to try to avoid all suffering, which oftentimes would be the argument made by the groups that are campaigning for euthanasia or physician-assisted suicide, you know, to avoid all suffering may not actually be the best thing.
So talk about that a little bit, maybe in the sense of palliative care and hospice care and the role that those types of care can play in ensuring that individuals who are suffering do experience a dignified, natural, and ethical death.
Those types of care, I think, are crucial. That it's so important to recognize on the flip side that, you know, just because there is some merit in joining our suffering with the suffering of Christ, it doesn't mean we should not make available to loved ones every possible relief. And palliative care medicine has grown enormously in its ability to provide relief from suffering without hastening death.
Mm. Now, oftentimes, I know that relatives who go through with a parent or a grandparent end-of-life situation can feel regret or concern that they may not have done enough or they may not have done the right things, and that can really lead to a longstanding sense of regret or concern. What can relatives do to guard against being left with a sense of regret as a result of feeling like they haven't done enough or maybe didn't do the right things for a loved one who is in an end-of-life situation?
Yeah, those are very, very difficult situations. And partly what would be recommended is the idea we talked about before, where, you know, having the difficult but I think very necessary conversation before things get too far down the path of looking at what the needs, wants, and desires of someone might be. There's not a lot of research on what happens to those who are left behind when there's an assisted suicide. It's a relatively new phenomena. But, you know, pulling from other research, I suspect that, you know, it's going to parallel what we call complicated bereavement. You know, it's going to be a longer healing process, grieving process. And at the end of the day, a family is going to have to come to terms with, you know, a family member who may have been lost through assisted suicide with some aspect of forgiveness and trying to just come to terms with, you know, understanding that people make decisions sometimes without all the information available, and to find a way to foster healing among relatives who remain behind.
Mm. Well, Dr. Muncher, we're just about out of time for this week, but before we go, I want to give you an opportunity to let our listeners know where they could get more information about navigating these difficult medical and end-of-life situations that we've been talking about today, and also learn more about your work.
Well, the work I've done that led to our talking today is through the Culture of Life Foundation, which is a nonprofit organization devoted to trying to help people understand what can be quite complicated issues around the culture of life that are important for everyone to understand. And so we try to translate that into brief articles that kind of get to the point as quickly as possible. And if people want more information, there's always references included in the articles that can take them to more detailed resources. The work I've done there is supported by, there's some other Christian bioethicists who have written more extensively on end-of-life issues, Dr. Christian Brueger and Dr. William May in particular. And I would encourage people to look up both of their articles on the Culture of Life Foundation website, cultureoflife.org, where they'll find much more information.
Okay, well, great. Well, thank you for that. Now, that web address again is cultureoflife.org. Again, culture-of-life.org. And listeners, if you find yourself in a situation where you're caring for a loved one who is in an end-of-life circumstance, please avail yourself of this and other helpful information. These can be difficult times and difficult circumstances, but as we as believers apply love and truth and grace in the midst of these challenging circumstances, I think we can truly experience a deeper level of love and care, not only our love and care for our loved ones and their care and love for us, but also that of our Heavenly Father. So please take advantage of these valuable bits of information. And Dr. Frank Muncher, I want to thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to join us today on Family Policy Matters.
Thank you for having me, John.
You have been listening to Family Policy Matters, a weekly radio show and podcast from NC Family. To listen to the show online and for more resources that will help you be a voice of persuasion in your community, go to our website at ncfamily.org. and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.